This is live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lindsay Clancy from the Hitting Tillers podcast in True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Stop, please.
All right, good morning, Doc.
Good morning.
All right. Ms. Rankin?
Thank you. Good morning, Doctor.
Morning.
Do you have your record in front of you, your notes? Or
I do.
And you can look at that anytime you want, just to refresh your memory and know what's going on with you.
Thank you.
Dr. Tufts, you are presently a psychiatrist, correct?
Correct.
And can you tell me where you went to med school?
University of Vermont.
And what were the years you were at University of Vermont?
2014 to 2018.
Beautiful country out there. Great place to live. Right?
It is. It's beautiful.
And when you graduated from med school, you then did your residency?
Correct.
And where was the residency?
Boston Medical Center.
And can you tell me, what is it exactly that you do as a psychiatric resident or a psychiatrist resident? What do you do?
Well, you do a lot of different things. You rotate in all the different aspects of psychiatry, as well as internal medicine, so that you have a foundational knowledge of broad medical topics. You admit patients into the inpatient hospital. You manage emergencies in the hospital and in the emergency room, decide whether patients need to be admitted psychiatrically or not, and also carry a panel of outpatients.
Is this a hospital that you're working in, or is it a Boston University? Is it a medical center?
So, yes, it's the Boston University program located at the hospital, Boston Medical Center, with also a lot of time spent at the various Boston VA locations.
And what were the years, I'm sorry, that you were in your residency?
2018 to 2022.
So you basically were working as either person studying to be a doctor, graduating, and then becoming a resident for the entire pandemic?
For the first part of the pandemic, yes. The
pandemic ended when Joe Biden said it ended. July 2022, right?
I'm not sure exactly when he said that.
Would you agree with me that when the pandemic started, around 2019, then you began your residency, 2020, 21, into 22, it was a large portion, if you will, of the pandemic time frame?
Yes.
All right. And we all had to walk around with masks and have no contact with people and make sure you have 6-foot radius before you touch anybody. All of that, right?
Yes.
How did that impact your residency?
Well, I still went into the hospital most of the time, wearing the proper protective equipment, but I absolutely still provided the necessary medical care that was needed. And some of the outpatient experiences were done via telemedicine.
Telemedicine?
Yes.
That's like a television screen. Like a Zoom or something?
It's Zoom or something similar.
Did you touch people, shake their hands, give them a hug, anything like that while you were working in your residency during the pandemic?
Sometimes, not, you know, I think everybody had to keep their distance at certain times. I began my program before the pandemic. So of course there was a lot more handshaking and things like that then.
Can't really keep your distance though when you're working as a labor and delivery nurse with a woman who's having a baby directly in front of you, can you?
I imagine not.
So when you finished, you graduate from a residency, or is it like you get a certificate or something?
Yes, there is a certificate for completing it.
And then, at that point, you are now a licensed doctor? Is that how it works?
Well, you're actually a licensed doctor the entire time that you're in residency. But upon the completion of that, you can obtain a full, unrestricted Massachusetts license and also become board certified.
And the board certification, for example, you have a board certification in general psychiatry, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
And when was it that you got that certification?
When was it? It was September 12th, 2022.
When was it that you actually started working as a physician, as a psychiatrist?
I started working as a physician and as a psychiatrist during the residency training program, but I started practicing completely independently at Astor Mental Health in August of 2022.
August of 2022.
Yes.
Now, prior to working with or at Astor, is that A-S-T-O-R? Yeah.
A-S-T-E-R, like the flower.
What is Astor? Is it like a group of doctors? Is it a medical center? What is it?
It is a outpatient practice that is owned by a psychiatrist. It has a number of psychiatrists as well as therapists.
And where is it located? Is it a brick and mortar type place where you have offices?
Yes. The original offices were in Braintree, Massachusetts, and now there's an office in Peabody as well.
Your office, where do you work?
So at the time I saw the patient, I was working in the Braintree office. I currently work in Peabody.
Where, I'm sorry?
Currently in Peabody, Massachusetts.
So when you start working at Astor, obviously like anybody else, you submit a resume, an application, you can get to Astor and they hire you, right?
It's a fairly lengthy process and a number of interviews with different staff at the practice, and some recommendations, letters of reference, verification of credentials, all of that. But yes, it can be comparable to another profession in that process.
Now, in August of 22, when you, congratulations, obviously you were hired by Astor, how many women had you treated in your residency that were postpartum?
With postpartum depression? Or just in the postpartum period?
How many women that were in the postpartum period did you treat prior to August of 22?
Many. It's hard to give an exact number, but I did have specific training in that population.
In that population. And where did you have the training in that population?
At Boston Medical Center.
And can you tell us, in that two-year period, approximately, how many that were in the postpartum period that you treated?
Okay, so it's really hard to give an exact number, but if I had to say, at least 50.
So in the two-year period, you treated 50 people in the residency that had postpartum. And can you tell me, what is postpartum? What is that?
Well, I just want to address that it was a four-year period, not a two-year period.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
And sorry, what was your question?
Hold on. You saw 50 people in a four-year period that had postpartum. In other words, they had done after having the baby, right?
Possibly, yeah, more or less. I saw a number of other patients. I saw much more than 50, but yes.
So after you had your residency and after you were hired by Astor, is that when you began in August of 22 your practice as a practicing psychiatrist?
Yes.
And when was it that you actually got your DEA license that authorizes you to prescribe medication to citizens?
So during residency, I had a DEA license, but it was affiliated with with Boston Medical Center. And then when I started at Astor, I had my own DEA number. I don't know exactly when, maybe sometime around August.
So August of 22, you start working at Astor. August of 22, you got your DEA license individually that authorized you to prescribe medication, correct?
Yes.
And it was when that you saw Lindsay Clancy?
I believe our first visit was September 15th.
Of?
2022.
So you were practicing as a psychiatrist for a little more than a month.
I was practicing independently with my full credentials for about a month. But the training is just immense that goes on before that.
Absolutely, it must be. But that's a residency that you're talking about, right?
Yes.
And you know, in a residency, I mean, all I know is Grey's Anatomy, but I mean, you're working under a doctor, the doctors are supervising you, and they tell you what to do, and then you report to them, correct?
Really tell you what to do. They're there as a resource if you need additional support. But I followed many of my own patients. I was the only person in the room with them, and you know, my notes were signed off by an attending physician, and that attending was available for any support I needed.
So, in August of 22, when you started working at Astor, you actually filled out a form for your advertising. Is that correct?
I believe that was handled by other people at the practice.
Ah, and who would that be?
Well, we have non-clinical staff that handle the administrative matters.
Okay, but you're a doctor, and you're out there to the public. You're advertising yourself and your services to the public. Is that fair?
I believe yes. I am not directing the marketing of our office, but yes.
Okay, never mind your office. I'm talking about you. You had an ad that was in on the computer that if somebody wanted to reach out to a doctor, they could see your ad amongst many others, right?
Well, I don't think there was an ad. I think we have a website that had some information about myself.
Oh. Now, in August of 22, up until when you saw Lindsay, how many patients in that month or so had you treated for postpartum psychosis?
How many patients in a month up until that month?
Well, I'm asking you about when you started working in August of 22 for Astor, and you are now on your own as an employee. How many patients had you treated before you saw Lindsay Clancy postpartum psychosis?
Well, in the span of 1 month, I would say none, because it's a very rare disorder.
Okay. But it exists, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
And one of the things would be the voices that people hear, right?
That is a symptom of psychosis, absolutely.
And that's legitimate, isn't it?
It is a legitimate diagnosis, absolutely.
No, not the diagnosis. People that have postpartum psychosis hear voices, do they not?
Many do. The disorder can manifest differently in different people, but yes, many people do hear voices.
How about postpartum depression? How many people in that month or so before you met Lindsay did you treat for postpartum depression?
In the span of 1 month, it's really hard to pinpoint that. Maybe a couple.
Maybe a couple? And do you recall how long you treated them for?
It's hard to really pin down the individuals.
Okay.
In a short span of time.
Can you tell the jury what you put in your ad or in the Astor website that you indicated that described you?
I don't recall.
Well, one of the things you did is that you said that you basically were a specialist in postpartum, people that have postpartum psychiatry. You indicated that on your website, didn't you?
Are you able to read the actual document? I don't remember exactly the wording.
You've been working now for how many years now? Three, since you saw this? One more?
Almost four, yes.
You haven't changed your ad on the website, have you?
I have not personally, no.
And you've read it probably a bunch of times, right?
I've read it a couple times, but I don't spend a lot of time on my website.
Okay. Do you recall that you indicated that you were specializing in any particular aspect of psychiatry?
Yes. It probably includes a special interest in women's health, in perinatal psychiatry, in trauma-related disorders, anxiety, and you know, there may be some other things that were mentioned.
Yeah, like women that have babies and they're suffering from postpartum depression.
Absolutely.
Right? You advertise that after a month working for Esther, right?
That's listed as one of my interests, definitely.
And again, forgive me, how many women did you treat for postpartum depression in that month and a half before you met Lindsay?
I don't know, maybe a couple. But I've treated many of them in the residency, which was just immediately before.
So when a person needs to see a psychiatrist, generally they're not well. Is that fair?
Some are not well. It really can vary.
So when someone comes to see a psychiatrist like you, it's because they need help, right?
Yes.
And when they come to you because they need help, for example, with Lindsay Clancy, she came to you because of your ad, right? Or your website for Acid, what you said about yourself.
I don't know exactly how she found us.
Well, do you know why she came to see you?
I'm not sure exactly.
Friday, we spent a long period of time going through your initial or the initial intake that she had to fill out. Is that correct? You recall that?
Yes, we did.
And the district attorney kept asking you, and this is in September, is it September 12th? Is that when that form was filled out?
I believe she completed the form on the 12th. The appointment was on the 15th.
So what does a person do? Do they call you or do they talk to somebody in administration? How do you get the form to fill out?
Yes, our administration handles that.
And what do they do? How does that happen?
They send them the documents, probably by email, and the patient fills them out. It might be all within the portal that we use.
Within the portal?
The patient portal, yes.
Okay, and that means that you go online and you can access Aster Mental Health and then all these little drop-down boxes would come up?
Something like that.
Are you aware of something like that, or are you aware of what it does?
So because I don't handle the scheduling and the sending of forms, I don't know exactly what it looks like.
Well, this is the form you're giving a person that needs help because they're possibly mentally ill. Is that right?
Yes, and what's important is that I review the forms and we go through them in the appointment. Absolutely, yes.
Now, understand that the your records, Exhibit 219, I believe, the jury will have access to the Tufts records, okay? You're aware of that, right? What's an exhibit?
Yes.
Because you have talked to the prosecution about what an exhibit is, and you know that your records are now in evidence before this jury, right?
If that's what you say, yes.
I wouldn't take what I said.
Well, I don't really.
That's fine.
I don't know the details of how this works. But
have you talked to them prior to your testimony?
No.
You haven't talked to the DA's office?
No, not at all.
You're a defendant in a very large lawsuit, are you not?
Yes. Yes.
You would happen to be represented by an attorney, would you?
I am.
And the fact that you have an attorney is your right under the Constitution. It doesn't mean that you're guilty of anything, right?
Right.
Okay. And you know that the outcome of this case is very, very major to the outcome of your lawsuit.
Yes. Okay.
So, you understand that if, in fact, it's determined that you advertised as an expert in postpartum Dan, in postpartum psychiatry, and you've had a month experience plus a residency. Would you consider that to be negligent or misrepresentation?
I do not believe that I have been negligent.
Do you understand what misrepresentation means?
Yes.
With a month under your belt plus your residency, do you really want this jury to believe that you were an expert? Can you empathize that?
I don't think that's exactly the wording that I used. I think I said that it was an interest of mine.
You were what?
The answer.
No. Go ahead. Good. You answer.
I just think the wording was that it's an interest of mine. I don't believe I called myself an expert.
Are you an expert in postpartum?
I may be. I don't know. I think it depends on what you define an expert as.
Well, when a patient comes to you and they fill out the form, you agree with me that your records reflect that form that she filled out on September 12th of 2022, right?
Yes.
And the form that the district attorney went through painstakingly with you is basically, it looks something like this, right? That's one of the forms that you've got people fill out, right? Right?
Yes.
See the little check mark?
Yes.
Who puts the check mark?
The patient.
So how many pages, because I don't want to go through all the pages yet, how many pages does a patient, or how many pages did Lindsay go through to check the boxes for Aster?
There were a lot of pages.
That's a lot, 10, 20?
Yeah, maybe between 10 and 20.
Okay. And basically, they're all little checks in boxes, correct?
Not just checks.
No? So, does the person then answer questions by typing in an answer such as, do you have any pending legal problems? No. Have you ever been arrested? No. Things of that nature, right?
Those are some of the questions.
And the questions also, do they ask the patient what medications they were on?
Yes.
Before seeing you?
Yes.
And Lindsay told you that she was on SSRIs in the past, right?
Yes.
And an SSRI means what?
A selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor.
And that's pretty powerful stuff, isn't it?
It's an effective treatment for depression and anxiety.
Well, it affects the serotonin levels in the brain, doesn't it?
Yes.
It rewires the brain, doesn't it?
It doesn't rewire the brain. It increases the serotonin, and many individuals with depression have low levels of serotonin.
So Lindsay told you that she had been prescribed an SSRI when she was in nursing school. Is that right?
Yes.
What was the SSRI?
Prozac.
And how long was she on the Prozac?
I'm not sure.
Never asked?
I probably asked.
Probably asked? Isn't it true? Don't you guys have a saying that it's not written, it didn't happen? You take copious notes, do you not?
It's impossible to write down every single thing that's said, so I write down what is clinically relevant, clinically necessary, but there's a lot that is discussed over an hour that is not able to be written down.
Such as the fact that a person was on an SSRI when they were in nursing school is not an important fact to find out?
Oh, no, that's important. Sorry.
No problem. I'm not doing, you know, the Sophie Cunningham act. I'm just asking a question. That's all. And you can answer it, okay? How about if she had a reaction to Prozac?
I asked her about the Prozac.
Is that written in your notes?
Yes.
And what did she say?
I mean, she said that she took it for a period of time. She didn't mention any side effects.
Oh, she didn't tell you that she had side effects. I see. So when a patient comes to see you with a month under your belt and they're sick and they're looking for help, you wait for them to volunteer facts to you?
She volunteered a lot of information. She knew very well what her medical history was and was able to provide that for me.
Such as what? That she was in nursing school and took Prozac?
That's part of it.
And she told you that, right?
Yes.
And she was pretty upfront and honest with you, wasn't she, in answering these questions, right?
I believe that she was.
We all spent some time talking about the fact that she declared that she had consumed alcohol, that she felt guilty about it. You called that on Friday and dwelled on that for a while, didn't we?
Yes, that was a component, yes.
I mean, that's something that's important, right?
Yes.
What was her drink of choice?
I'm not sure.
Did you ever ask her?
I'm not sure. We were not concerned that her level of alcohol use.
Well, he certainly was Friday, right?
Doctor, wait for the question, all right? And then same thing, I'll have counsel wait until you finish your answer. All right? Go ahead, Ms. Reddington.
So is it important, Doctor, for you as a physician to know your patient? In other words, know who they are.
Yes.
And you know that Lindsay was a nurse, correct?
Yes.
You know that she graduated, obviously, from college, right?
Yes.
Is she a good student?
I don't recall.
Do you know when she got married?
I don't recall that specific detail. I don't know. I knew she was married.
She had three kids, right?
Yes.
And the reason that you knew that she was married is because you spoke to her husband, Patrick, correct? What did you?
He attended one of the appointments, and I spoke with him on that date.
Ah. And did you say hi, Hawaii, and handshake when you came to your office?
It was telemedicine.
It was what?
Telemedicine.
Is it fair to say that after, 14, I think you said to the jury, 14 appointments that you had with Lindsay during that period from September till January, 14 appointments?
Yes.
Every single one of them were by telemedicine, weren't they? Until you came in this courtroom Friday, you never saw this woman in person, did you?
Correct.
Were you ever concerned about her mental health as a person?
Absolutely.
She was crying. She told you symptoms that she couldn't get out of bed. Isn't that right?
At one time she said it was difficult to get out of bed.
Oh, difficult to get out. Why was it difficult for Lindsay Clancy to get out of bed?
Because she was very depressed.
And did you give her a hug? Oh, no, you're on telemedicine, so you couldn't give her a hug, could you? You didn't have any chance to even look at her in person, did you?
I could look at her. It was always a video appointment. I couldn't give her a hug, but that's not actually something that psychiatrists typically do with patients.
I imagine. Now, I'm looking at you, and you've got the witness stand cutting you off in half, right? So I can't see from your waist down, your legs, your feet, your hands, anything. That's the same view that you have on the telemedicine, right?
Yes.
Isn't it fair to say that you've studied and that you've learned that there are objective manifestations that patients may have that would be a tell, like if you're playing poker, you have a tell, that would be an indicia of the fact that they're stressed or emotionally disturbed, right?
Yes.
Like hand wringing, right?
Yes.
Were you able to see the hands wringing when you were on telemedicine?
I don't recall seeing her hands.
You recall, you know how people sit there and they do this with their leg and the leg bounces because they're going through some type of emotional stress? You couldn't even see her legs, could you?
I couldn't see her legs, but I knew that she was under stress.
So, when she came to you, September 15th, I believe, is the first time that you all actually discussed her condition, correct?
Yes.
And looking at medical records, which the jury will be able to look at, it says visit date, September 15th, 2022, and you can look along with me if you wish. Indicates why she came to see you, right?
Yes. Right?
Yes?
Yes.
Okay. Why did she come to see you? According, not guessing and speculating, never mind the TV. You just look at your notes. Tell me what brought Lindsay Clancy to your office?
Postpartum anxiety.
Is that it? Is that what you noted in the records?
Well, those were her words when asked, what are the problems for which you are seeking help?
I see. Postpartum anxiety. Now, as a psychiatrist, meeting with this young woman after a month or so of working as a psychiatrist for Esther, there are tests that you administer to a woman who's in postpartum to find out what type of anxiety they have, right?
There are some screening tests, but the most important thing is what the patient tells you and what my assessment is in the session.
I see. And that would carry through the Tufts evaluations for all 14 of those meetings. It's what the patient tells you, right?
Yes, and what I observe in the session.
Through the television?
Through the computer.
What, if you can tell me, is the Hedenberg test?
It is a scale that looks at symptoms of postpartum depression.
And when you administer, that's a major test, isn't it, for a doctor to evaluate a patient for PPD?
I wouldn't say it's a major test.
It's a pretty big one, though, isn't it? It's the only one that measures the postpartum depression, right?
It's a common one.
So what?
Commonly used.
Commonly. All right, so when you used it on Lindsay, when was that administered to her?
I did not use it on Lindsay.
Why?
We use the PHQ-9, which
what is a... PHQ-9?
It's a depression screening form.
That's like generalized anxiety disorder, general depression. It's got nothing to do with a woman suffering from postpartum depression, does it?
I disagree.
Well, do you agree that people perhaps that may know a little more than you determined that the Hedenberg scale is the appropriate scale to administer to a pregnant or postpartum woman?
Yes.
Sustained as a form.
You're familiar with the Hedenberg scale, right?
I've heard of it.
And can you explain to me how it's graded?
No, I cannot.
There are 30 questions in it, are there not?
I don't use this scale, so I don't know how many questions there are.
So, the Hedenberg scale, do you even know that the cutoff for someone that is depressed in their condition of postpartum would be 15? Anything over that, they're in severe depression?
Okay.
Do you know that her first Hedenberg test that was administered to her put her at a 23?
Objection.
Overall.
Severe depression.
I was not aware of this test. I was not aware that this had been administered to her.
Well, you know that except for the Prozac that she had when she was a nurse, what, 23, 24, 23 years old, she hadn't, other than seeing her own doctor for having a baby, she hadn't seen any doctors. You knew that, right?
Didn't know exactly which doctors she sees. I think we ask about your primary care doctor, but she did not report any other medical issues that she was under treatment for.
So is it important for Dr. Jennifer Tufts to know whether or not a patient who is coming to you for help has a prior medical history other than what they might tell you?
Well, when patients are able to advocate for themselves and share their medical history, we rely on what they tell us.
Was she able to advocate for herself, in your opinion, when she came to see you and you evaluated her in September?
Absolutely.
About October?
Yes.
About November?
Yes.
About December?
Yes.
And your medical records, you would agree, show that during that period of time that she was deteriorating was a word that was used on Friday. Isn't that right?
No.
You used the word deteriorating on Friday, did you not?
She was a little bit worse at certain appointments, and the deteriorating word, which is not my word choice, is what is in the note because I had to select that.
Because why? You have some kind of a program that you have to check the box and you have to bring down the drop box? You can't take a pen and write something down about a patient?
There are certain parts of the note where I can write whatever I feel is necessary, but that specific aspect of the note is a button where you have to click one of three choices.
So when the jury's going through your medical records, one of the things that they're going to see is that when you meet with the patient, you have a form that you fill out where it says, if you feel like you're going to harm yourself or somebody else, make sure you go to the emergency room, right?
Yes.
If you have any urges to harm yourself or others, go to the nearest emergency room. That's in every single time that you meet with a patient, right?
Yes.
And it indicates that if there's any, call the suicide prevention and crisis hotline. If you feel that you're in crisis, you may text home to a particular number anytime. What's a suicide hotline?
It's a phone number that patients in crisis can call and speak to a trained counselor.
Now, a psychiatrist, you'd agree with me, is not a counselor, that's for sure, right?
Well, a psychiatrist has training in therapy as well as in medicine.
Did you give Lindsay Clancy any therapy?
There was some therapy incorporated in our sessions,
like
but
what?
We did
like
sorry, providing emotional support, listening to her.
Hold on.
No,
she didn't finish her answer.
Hold on, everybody. You asked the question, we'll let her finish, and then you can follow up with any questions you want. Go ahead, Doc.
Anything else you want to say?
So her sessions were largely focused on the medication management, but there was an aspect of therapy including those items.
Okay, and the sessions were for what, 17 minutes?
No.
How long were they?
25 to 30 minutes.
So 25 to 30 minutes on the television, and were you face the TV screen with her for the full 25 minutes?
Yes.
And that's not noted in your records. It says 17 minutes in all your records, doesn't it?
So if you look closely, it says the therapy component was for 17 minutes. It doesn't say the entire duration is 17 minutes.
So what do you do when you're trying to get therapy, psychiatrist to a patient that came to see you? What do you do? What do you do for therapy?
It depends on the person.
Well, how about Lindsay Clancy? What did you do for therapy with her?
I listened to her. I listened to her concerns and provided support. I tried to provide her with hope that eventually things would improve.
So you listened to her, you listened to her concerns, and you'd agree with me that her concerns were, for example, that she actually was unable to sleep. It's one of her concerns, right?
She was having a lot of difficulty in sleep.
On the September 15th meeting, you indicated that her mood was okay, but her affect was anxious, and you called it incongruent. What is that?
She said she was feeling okay. She appeared anxious, and she also stated that she was anxious.
So one of the things that you talked about Friday is when a patient presents with an incongruent, something like that, appearance perhaps, that would mean that they're saying, I'm okay, but they don't look like they're okay, right?
Well, it could. I don't think her affect and her mood were really that incongruent at that time. I think that she didn't appear terribly depressed. I didn't say she was terribly depressed in that initial visit, but she said she was anxious and she appeared anxious. That's pretty congruent.
Okay. So did you put in the report that she was congruent or incongruent?
So that is not an option for me to indicate in that section, but so it was congruent.
You're like a robot. You can't take a pen and write something down. You have to do the Dropbox and the X's on the computer?
Well, if it's on the computer, I'm limited by the options that are up there.
You're a doctor. Why are you limited?
Because of the technology.
What technology? The fact that there's a form on a computer? You're trying to treat a human being who comes to you for help.
And that's what's most important. What's most important was the treatment, not what is checked off on a box.
Makes sense. So you were unable to make a note as to whether or not her affect and her mood appeared to be in conflict and that she would have been incongruent. And that she had poor insight, you couldn't write that down. Is that right? Because the box doesn't let you.
Correct.
So basically she's telling you that I'm okay. Well, actually, when she came, do you know that she never saw, other than when she was in nursing school, would it surprise you, a psychiatrist? And that was only for like a week? When she got the Prozac in nursing school because she was afraid of public speaking? Did you know that?
I was aware that she did not have a significant past psychiatric history. I was aware of that.
Okay, so you were the first psychiatrist and she had the pleasure of meeting. Is that correct?
Yeah. I think it was.
And isn't that important for you as a doctor to take a history?
I did take a history.
So can you tell us? You're testifying here for the government. Tell us whether or not she had any past psychiatric history other than in nursing school for a week for the Prozac.
She did not report any other past psychiatric history other than the Prozac and Wellbutrin.
So when a patient comes to see you and you're treating to help that patient, if they don't report something to you, you don't know about it apparently, right?
Well, I think it depends. There are certainly things I can assess, but if it's related to their history, I do need them to tell me.
Well, you can't assess it unless you ask, right?
Unless I ask or they volunteer it or
of
they
course,
fill it out.
We already talked about the volunteering. How about you as a doctor, when you're evaluating a patient coming to you for help, do you ask them questions?
Yes.
You didn't ask her a prior history.
I did.
What did she tell you?
She said that her prior history was what we discussed about the Prozac in the nursing school.
So basically, other than hoping to give her hope, is what you said. For the therapy. How do you give someone hope for therapy? You're the doctor.
Try to encourage them and...
What did you encourage her on September 15th?
Sorry?
What did you encourage her to give her hope on September 15th?
What did I encourage her?
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly the words. It was almost 4 years ago.
Records?
No, we don't write those, you know, details of everything
that's said.
Well,
that's the therapy you're talking about, right? Yes?
Yes.
And you don't write down the therapy you give a patient in the records, right?
Well, I write something about it.
Hold on.
So yes or no?
Hold on. You just let her finish the question. If you listen to the question and answer just what they ask, okay? Go ahead. You can rephrase that question.
No, I'll let her answer. All right.
I mentioned that I provided supportive therapy.
What is supportive therapy?
It's listening to the patient's concerns and providing emotional support and validation.
So, emotional support and validation all sounds good. Here's a young woman who was what, 20, 29, 30 years old, came to see you?
Yes.
And came to see you for help, right?
Yes.
Told you she couldn't sleep and she was anxious, correct?
Yes.
You know that she was postpartum, correct?
Yes.
You know that as a patient who was postpartum. By the way, what is your opinion of the period of postpartum wherein one can have postpartum depression and, more importantly, postpartum psychosis? What's the time frame?
It's typically 1 year.
So she was well within that time frame, correct?
Yes.
And you tried to provide therapy by giving her hope. And how long do you figure did that take? 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 2 minutes?
I'm not sure. I think it was different in each session.
Okay. So the only thing that you diagnosed Lindsay with on September 15th was GAD, Generalized Anxiety Disorder, correct?
It was Generalized Anxiety Disorder as well as an Adjustment Disorder with Depressed Mood.
And you prescribed medications to her, right?
Yes.
And the medication that you provided to her was the sertraline, right?
Yes.
And the sertraline would be Zoloft, right? Now, this is a little chart that shows prescriptions that Lindsay was on. And you are the yellow colors. Okay? Let's see that. Would you agree with me that on September 15th, you prescribed sertraline, Zoloft, 30 counts on September 15th, 25 milligrams, right?
Yes.
Have you ever read the website for sertraline?
The website for sertraline?
Yeah. Sertraline, Zoloft, is a chemical that is marketed as a pharmaceutical, right?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It's a pill, right?
Yes.
And as we said, it's an SSRI pill, correct?
Yes.
Do you know that Zoloft is not indicated for generalized anxiety? Why'd you give her Zoloft?
It is a very effective medication for generalized anxiety disorder.
So you're familiar with the drug labeling for Zoloft, is that correct?
Generally.
Are you aware of what the manufacturer of Zoloft indicates it can be used for, to treat?
I'm aware that it's used to treat various forms of anxiety disorders as well as major depression.
So when Lindsay came to see you, you know that she had stopped breastfeeding her son, right?
Not at the time of the first appointment.
When did she stop breastfeeding? In October?
Something around then.
You know that she had little or no psychiatric history other than seeing you, correct?
And the Prozac, yes.
You know that, in fact, that she had stopped drinking whatever it was that she was drinking, because you never asked, right?
I was not concerned about her level of drinking.
Well, it's in your form, right?
That was at the intake, but
Did you know that she wasn't drinking when you were meeting with her, correct?
Yeah, that's what she told me.
Okay, and you believe what she told you, right?
Yes.
So when she sees you, she's not on any psychiatric antitropics or whatever they're called medications, correct? She wasn't on any medication.
Correct.
And she had stopped drinking anything, whatever it may have been, right?
I'm not sure when she completely stopped drinking, but yes.
You don't know when she started, when she stopped, what she drank, do you?
Well, I was not concerned that she was an alcoholic.
That's a yes or no. Did you have any idea? Because we spent a long time on Friday talking about her guilt and having that she drank alcohol. You don't know what she drank, when she started, when she stopped, do you?
I know some details about her alcohol use, but it was overall minimal.
What were the details then? Tell me what the details were. There was that one little box that was checked off. What are the details with it?
That she drank 1 to 2 times a week, 1 to 2 servings 5 times a week.
And you don't know where, what it was, you have no idea, right?
I think she had mentioned at some point that it was calming. It was something that was helpful.
I'm sorry.
Calming.
Okay.
Calming.
So it was numbing. It was like trying to numb something, I guess, right?
That's one way of saying it.
I imagine you've treated veterans that had post-traumatic stress disorder, right?
Yes.
And would you agree with me that many times when people have an anxiety disorder or PTSD, whatever the case may be, they try to numb their feelings? Mm-hmm. Is that fair?
Sometimes they do.
And sometimes they use alcohol, right?
Sometimes they do.
Well, we don't know what alcohol, she wouldn't even know if it was a beer, do we?
I didn't think that was relevant for her.
So, with all of that, with that information, you then prescribed Zoloft to her, correct?
Yes.
You went over the side effects of Zoloft, sertraline, I imagine, with her, right?
Yes.
Did you tell her that one of the known side effects is suicidal thoughts and actions and ideation?
Well, that's specifically in children, so I don't think I mentioned that because it wasn't relevant.
Not real. Suicidal ideation and homicidal ideation. There's a black box warning. Zoloft, along with other SSRIs, right?
Under age. For children and adults younger than, let's see.
I apologize. Can you just listen to my question and answer a yes or no? Is there a black box warning on Zoloft?
Yes.
All right. And a black box warning is required or prescribed by what? The FDA?
Probably.
And it basically warns that, especially with young people or young adults, that it may cause suicidal or, God forbid, homicidal ideation. Yes?
Yes. And
you're aware that, in fact, the FDA has determined that that goes up possibly to a 23, 24, 25-year-old. You know that, right?
I think 24 is what they said.
Yeah, I'll give you 24. It's possible, is it not, that the SSRIs that get into a person's brain affect a person that's 3 or 4 years older than the FDA cutoff with suicidal ideation or homicidal ideation? It's possible.
There's a lot of development that happens in the brain between ages like up to 24 and closer to 30. The brain is fully matured at past age 24, and so it's less vulnerable than in a younger individual.
So with 24, you're suggesting there's a cutoff. Are you suggesting to the jury that a drug that increases the risk of suicide in a 24-year-old patient cannot increase the risk of suicide in a 29 or a 30-year-old patient? Just a little bit.
I don't believe there's evidence that it causes that at all in individuals over 24.
More live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lindsay Clancy is on the way. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a moment. From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.